Wednesday, December 20th. Let it be known that all members are present accounted for except for Mr. Smuckler, who let us know he would be out of town this week. And maybe we start with a moment of silence, please. Thank you. Acceptance of agenda. Is everybody okay with the order that we got? We have a fairly full meeting tonight. And it looks like we're okay. Any? Okay. Move on with the agenda. Announcements. Are there any announcements for December? From any board members? No? That was simple. We have one written communication from the Citizens Bike Committee that was given to us and council. And public comments, now would be the time for that. Members of the audience wishing to address the board on pertinent matters other than scheduled agenda items may do so at this time when recognized by the chair. Upon recognition by the chair, please state your name and address. Comments are limited to 3 minutes, and pursuant to the Brown Act, we cannot discuss matters unless it is listed on the agenda, but we can agendize the items for a future meeting for discussion or action. So if anybody would like to speak. No takers. All right.
May I interrupt for just a moment, please? Were we supposed to approve the minutes?
It's if you'll follow the agenda, then it's on the agenda.
We're coming up to it. That's the consent calendar. That's
Sorry.
Where we are now.
Sorry.
Okay, has everybody looked over the minutes from last meeting, from November? Let's see. I had one correction. The very, very last item, number 12, the date is wrong. It says for next meeting, October 18th. That should be today, December 20th. That was the only correction that I had. Did anybody have anything else that needed to be?
I had an issue, but I didn't know how to correct it. It says nitrates come from natural sources, generally in fertilizers in the ground. And I don't think you consider fertilizers in the ground a natural source. I know that nitrates can be in the water from a natural source, but fertilizers represent an addition to that naturally occurring concentration. So I'm not sure how to word that.
To the ground is not naturally occurring in the ground from fertilizers. I think is that correct?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying is that when you may have nitrates at a certain concentration in the water, but when you add the fertilizers to the field and you keep adding fertilizers, you're going to increase that concentration. And I wouldn't say that was natural.
Madam Chair,
I would move that we strike the sentence simply because
or the last three words from the ground.
Why don't we just strike the word natural?
Just strike the sentence because it was the reason being that there'll be lots of further discussion on the nitrate issue, I expect, whether it's here at the council, and much more thorough explanations of the various sources. This was just, I think the germane issue here was the quick notice and the health alerts.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
The reference, Mr. Boucher, it could have been making to both natural sources or from such things as fertilizers, which aren't natural. So maybe what we can do is not approve the minutes tonight, have staff go back and just revisit that part to make sure, and then bring them back at the next meeting.
Why not just eliminate the word natural?
Well,
because there are natural sources of nitrates. That's what Janine's saying.
I'm going to suggest that we strike the sentence for the following reason. These are, what do they call, action-oriented minutes. There are so many other issues that were discussed that night around this that are not in here. And since we know the council has set it for hearing, and this would be primarily an educational and technical discussion, to, while accurate, the suggested revised wording, it's trying to do something with these minutes that I don't think the minutes are up to doing. And so that's why I would move that the minutes be adopted with the date correction and striking that sentence.
I would second that.
Okay. All in favor? But do we still have the correction for the last item?
Yeah,
on the date?
That was the date.
Okay.
Yeah.
So was there any other corrections? All right, all in favor of the adjusted minutes?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved, unanimous?
We got that.
Thank you. All right, director's report. Janine, did you have items on the director's report that you want to cover? I know Mr. Boucher and Mr. Cunningham are not here.
They are not here at the moment, and I can't really speak to any of their items since I have...
I know there were some emergencies they were handling.
I have
there was any
further.
Questions for Janine? I don't think it would be appropriate to have Janine try to answer for Bill or Frank.
I have a transportation question. Well, it's
that is
just
Ms. Burlingame.
On the joint request for proposals, where we're doing it along with the Regional Transit Authority, Atascadero, mm-hmm. Paso Robles, what is the timeline on that joint request and the city making a decision whether to accept the bidders on that or continue with the current? Just the timeline, that's all I'm asking.
We're hoping to have the RFP out on the street mid to late January. Typically, it'd be out 3 weeks to 4 weeks. So by the end of February, we would have proposals back, have them be evaluated, and be taking them to our councils sometime late March for whether we would be approving a contract, selecting a company, or if we were rejecting the bids and then extending the current agreement.
And I can't recall, do they usually have a stop by PWAB in discussing who the who to award the contract with? I just can't recall from last time.
Contract awards we generally have not unless okay. there has been time.
Okay.
Any other questions for Janine?
I have a question maybe for the board. We have an item in Public Works Report on page 4 of 5. That's most of the page underwater. And in the center of that paragraph, as a result of this problem, we are in the process of revising our water emergency response plan.
Yes.
Is it possible for this board, PWAB, to receive this before it goes to the city council so we could hash it over, get some public input, present them with a PWAB seal of approval?
I think that would probably be a question for where the time frame from Frank and from Bill are, and they're not here to answer that. I can give them a call tomorrow or Friday. And
would the board be interested in doing this?
Okay. They're not here when it got to this item. I was going to request, which anyone can, but I think I was going to hope the board would have an interest in looking at the previous plan as it existed, any documents that were produced for other audiences other than us, just copies, to not ask them to do what. And I will digress a moment into background. I've been a local health officer who dealt with water systems, emergency notifications, this kind of thing, in for county and cities. And I was stressing the lessons learned approach. I did comment that going at lessons learned mean that you're looking to make things better. You don't look for people to say, oh, why didn't you do this? On the other hand, staff has to understand that they can't drift into the tendency of a rationalization, oh, we fixed it, justification for what was done, and, well, we notified all the people legally we were required to notify, and that's why I wanted to get those documents as a point of discussion, and to find out whether there were problems in what the substance of the previous emergency plan were or in its implementation. Because it may have been substantively lacking in covering all the bases, but it's a plan that will have been approved by the state because they have to file it.
Back to the original question,
so,
would we want to look at this before it goes to the city council?
It would be nice to see the existing plan to see where it was flawed.
Can we as a board request that?
We as individuals can request it. Mr. Boucher said that it was a protocol, part of city policy. That's something anybody from the public can go into public services or city hall and get. They should be able to view it. That should be public record. I was a little concerned with the mechanism of it. It sounds like in the end, it was obviously not effective enough and needs to be redone. I don't know if it's something we should grab prior to council directing us to do that, but I think it would be a good idea for us to educate ourselves on what the standing policy was that needed to be improved.
Well, I'm merely trying to gain an opportunity to further the public information. And if we can have a copy of it, discuss it, may or may not want to make some suggestions, but at least it gives the public an opportunity to hear.
2007 deadline, by implication, and it makes sense, imposed by the state to get something in. I don't think this is the kind of thing.
Quite often things like that don't ever go through council because they're required by staff.
And I don't think, and I realize I'm discussing this at length, but I'll just say I understand. I've had some experience with these. I don't think we're missing any boat if this goes forward to the state and we haven't hopped on and had a chance to comment. What I think what's more important is that we get the documents that are produced and discuss them in light of the experience.
Can we do that?
I see no reason if on our own initiative without asking staff to do any work other than give us copies of something that are public information.
I can ask that it be included in our staff report next month.
Yeah, that the actual documents be included in the staff report.
Do you need a motion to do that? Can you do that for us, please?
Chair of the,
thank you.
I've already made note of it. I'll call Bill Boucher as soon as he's back in.
That's good. That's all I was concerned about was getting information to the public.
Including any documents they've prepared going through the sequence of events, copies.
There isn't any system set up to do what people were asking. People asked at the, several of them at the public comment at the council asked for, they wanted people going house to house to tell people. We don't have enough people, and they take the entire city staff, and it would take them several days to go house to house to everybody.
Bill, I think that's the point. One of the reasons Roger and I very much support it, wants it publicly discussed, because there's an educational aspect to see the limits of what can be done. Mm-hmm. But maybe you sometimes come up with things that no one has thought of. But I agree with you. Some of the things people, I understand the threat to their health, they wanted something instant, right. And that isn't the way things can work.
There is that emergency radio in place, but is anybody listening?
Yeah. Well, this kind of ties into something that I wanted to bring up for future agenda items that had to do with our resources for emergency communications without the community and volunteerism and having a network for putting things in place. I thought it was ridiculous that Bill Boucher would have to go to the doctor's offices himself individually to try to make notification. Yeah. But we're a small little town, everybody just kind of chips in. All right. I know we're moving quickly through the first part of the agenda because the second part of the agenda will make up for it. Okay, number 9 is old business, which we have none of, and we will move on now to item 10, new business. And the first one, number A, is review of the North Coast Transit Plan presented by consultant Doug Langill. Did I get it right, Doug?
Close.
Not quite.
Yeah,
Langill, thank you, of IBI Group. Doug, would you like to come up to the microphone and begin with your presentation of the North Coast Transit Plan.
Madam Chair,
I just cut in real quickly. Okay. I just want to do a real quick background.
Could I ask a quick question of staff first? I notice in the places that the public has this for review, the library is not on the list.
The library has a Public Works Advisory Board agenda packet, so it would be in there.
Okay, so people, if they go to the, they can get it that way from
it also
the
is on the city's website. You go to the transit area or the under announcements, there's a link to that as well.
I was just thinking of the library, since people think of getting public documents.
So Doug, I got ahead of myself. Can I allow Janine to give our introduction before you start?
Just real quick.
Yes.
Thank you.
In October of last year, the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments awarded a contract to IBI Group to develop the North Coast Transit Plan, which is encompasses short-range transit plans for the city of Morro Bay, the community of Los Osos, and Cambria as well, and also to kind of look at the whole North Coast region as far as transportation issues are concerned. So with regard to just for Morro Bay and what we're concerned with the component of this plan that deals with our city's short-range transit plan, which is a five-year plan that's required under TDA law to occur. And there's various things that are looked at and reviewed and recommendations that are made from that come from a review of your past performance, a review of your financial projected revenues you'd be receiving, projected expenditures and whatnot, to make your system, help it be more efficient and more effective than it currently is. And so what you have tonight is the final draft plan that this board will be reviewing and making comments. And what staff is recommending is you have on the front there is that the City Council hold a public hearing to consider adoption of the plan. And I do have to adopt all of the bullets with the exception of number two, because the city already does, again, create these templates for the subscription trips each week. So there is the dispatcher knows times that are available for non-subscription callers. With that, I'll go ahead and turn it over to Doug, and he'll give a short presentation of the plan, and then he's available for any questions that you may have. Elian Guillot with the Council of Governments, who's the staff person in lead for this project, is also here this evening in case there's any questions on the Council of Governments side as well. I've been asked to define many to one trip. Sorry, I get into the headspace of the terminology so often, I sometimes forget to try to do the layperson. Many to one is when a caller phones and requests a ride, usually it's the bus goes to one location to pick up one person and takes them to their other location. That's one to one. Many to one would be like, for example, a school trips where you go to various places within the community to pick up the children and then you bring them to one location. So you're picking up 5, 10, 15 kids throughout the community, then taking them and dropping those 5, 10, 15 kids in one location. And what this allows the service to be able to do is be more efficient and effective because you're dropping multiple people off at one location rather than the multiple locations.
Is the same term used for the opposite, like when you pick the kids up and distribute them around?
It's one to many.
Is that?
It's the same type.
I understand. I'm just getting the terminology. Mm-hmm.
So with that, I'll turn it over to Doug. And any other questions you have? I don't know whether he wants to go through chapter by chapter and take questions or just go through the whole presentation. That may be up to the chair and Doug to kind of negotiate how you want to do that because it is kind of a lengthy document.
I'll have some more questions for staff, too, mainly as far as how the plan, as it is, this revised version, meets our specific city's needs for the short-range transit plan, because you've handled that in the past and have the most experience with that.
Certainly.
Sorry. I was saying that as we go on, I'd like to get Janine's feedback on how the revision of this aligns with our requirements for the short-range transit plan, because this whole package was a way for us to not do our own as a city, but for those plans to be developed throughout the North Coast. And the previous version did not cover what, you know, it didn't cover what we needed.
Rating plan component of this whole plan. There were some things that were missing in it. We did have discussions with Doug and with the Council of Governments, and I do think that the draft plan that you have before you has all of those other things in it that were missing. It has the financial component. It has the capital plans, which hadn't been developed at that point. It does do the evaluation of past performance, and the recommendations are much more in line with funding that would be available or is projected to be available along with the expenditures that they first project the system to have. So I don't see the the issue of rejecting the plan outright and then having to go do our own as what might have happened if things did not change, that won't be occurring.
That is very good news.
What you have, if you remember some of the stuff that you saw before, this is a dramatic departure from what had been submitted previously. And I think the reason for that is I think there was some miscommunication in the very beginning of the plan that sort of led the consultant down a particular path that if we had had some of that communication beforehand might have changed what we would have seen and would have had something a lot earlier. So I'm much more comfortable with this than I was originally.
Excellent.
So with that, I turn
Madam
it back.
Chair, in terms of having the presentation, I had looked at my notes from a pretty extensive previous presentation that was done, and when I read the recommendations, discussion we had here, that not that you did, but that we had here, it really has, it fits into the context of the problems we had, and I think very well. In other words, I understood the recommendations of this fix, this and that, when I saw the financials. So I think that detail quite a bit was what was there or what was missing had previously been gone into, and I think a focus on the recommendations is most helpful, I think.
Any other comments for Janine before we move on to Doug? Doug's presentation? No? Okay. Do you need anything else?
Nothing else for me other than take it away, Doug.
All right,
okay,
Doug. Thank you.
I definitely will keep it short, okay? It won't be word for word, promise. And I'll focus on some of the higher level findings and the recommendations. But first those, okay?
Yeah.
And I you know, part of that is to get reaction, and I sure got reaction. Okay, so it got me sort of in the right lane again, okay?
You have one of the best staff traffic cops around you could possibly have in Janine.
Well, actually, here's another one.
Well, I can only speak from my city perspective.
I had quite a tag team.
All's well that ends well.
It got me back on. And I think one of the big things is the bottom line to start with. And with Dial-A-Ride, there will not be a requirement, knock on wood, if everything works out the way it's supposed to, for any general fund contributions. So it can motor along nicely without you worrying. Okay, the trolley is going to require anywhere from a little over $27,000 to under $35,000 a year of general fund contributions. And I want to talk about that in the recommendations a bit, because there might be an angle we can play in terms of reducing that, okay, that didn't come to mind until recently. Now, we started the study out with not only looking at existing data, doing some field work, possibly with spread over the North Coast, not enough of, you know, specific site field work, and also public input. The public input process was honest and righteous, but it covered the whole North Coast, and it right up and down the North Coast, the input and the participation by the public wasn't as great as planners would like it to be. And I think that's pretty universal. People have other lives that they sort of get focused on, and it's hard to get people out to meetings or to engage them. SLOCOG conducted a number of onboard surveys. They did one for the Route 12. There was 102 respondents for that. There was one for your own DAR, and I think it was only 16, okay, which isn't a lot. The trolley, boy, the folks were more engaged. There was 59 respondents for the, you know, the trolley onboard survey. Runabout on North Coast trips, there were 20 planning workshop. So we got a lot of input, but not necessarily from the people that we're all here to serve. So that is discouraging. Now, the findings. The Dial-A-Ride service it's pretty productive. It's getting over 7 passengers per revenue hour. If I use jargon?
No, that's obvious.
Hit me, okay? Just ask for a clarification. And farebox recovery is, in California standards, is very comfortable. It's riding about 15% right now. So, and the state requirement is 10. So that's a good cushion. The trolley, you're getting over 13 passengers an hour, which there's a lot of suburban transit routes that would die for that kind of productivity, okay? So that's not bad stuff, okay? And, wow, farebox recovery on a tourist-based system at a little over 20%. That's pretty, you know, I would say remarkable.
Is that 13... passengers per hour per route or both routes combined?
That's per bus hour.
Per bus hour.
Yeah.
So that includes that's, both?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that would be like if there are two buses out, you'd have to get 26 people for two buses to get 13 per revenue hour.
Okay. The equation is taking the number of passengers divided by the number of service hours that are actually run, which when you have two vehicles would be double.
And now our trolley doesn't fall into the 10% requirement. Is it? Are we still general fund and not required, or did we make the switch with the second trolley that we have some federal transit?
The trolley does not use Transportation Development Act money, so it doesn't fall under the requirement to have to meet the, I think it's 10% because it's a rural fixed route. But we use it as kind of a guide to let us know whether we're moving in the right direction or not.
Productive.
And, yeah.
Okay. It's a healthy benchmark to follow.
It is. It
know.
Is.
And what is the fare box on the trolley?
It's around 21% currently.
Good. It's one of the ways we can justify spending general
sure.
fund money on it. That was,
yeah.
you know, a nice thing to have. Thanks for the clarification.
So, and you know,
added question, please. You mentioned 25 to 35,000 out of the general fund to mm-hmm. operate the trolley. How much of that is recovered in the fare?
Okay, dial a ride. You're looking at seniors, students, and including a very important service for this community is servicing preschool daycare service programs, and then low-income individuals that basically maybe come from a carless household or a single car household where the car is out on the journey to work. The trolley, it's got to be tourists. I think that's why we need that service in town. You're going to experience low or slow population growth over the next 5 years. I think it was estimated around 6% over the 5 years. So some people might think, wonderful, leave us alone, and others might worry that it's going to affect TDA allocations, etc. So there's a good and bad side to slow population growth. The route 12, what we found is, again, that's for a kind of a rural inner city route. It's getting overall 20 passengers per revenue hour, and that's not bad, but most of those folks are between here and San Luis Obispo. The portion, the three round trips a day north of here are pretty barren, pretty lonely, okay? It's got strong farebox recovery at about 32%. We found that the 12, although it serves you as a regional route, the majority of the riders from the survey are actually people who live in San Luis and are coming up to the college. So that's where the majority of, at least the respondents, came from for our survey. The route's there. It's got good frequencies. Notice I didn't say headway. Okay, that's transit jargon for frequency, okay? So it has 60-minute frequency so that there's a bus every hour, which is which is, you know, pretty high for a service like that. A lot of inner city routes, Lifeline routes, are 2 hours, 3 hours. The trips are 3 hours apart. So that's a pretty high level of service. Now, an expansion into those hours will definitely bring your fare box recovery down. And it might bring it down dangerously close or below the 10%. So we're not recommending at this point expansion of service. We're maintain it at the current levels. And that's also to allow yourselves to see how your operating costs go under a new contractual arrangement. So it's one of caution, keeping the Dial-A-Ride service levels at that constant. We did make a number of recommendations that talked about more in the way of advanced scheduling, because if you're going to maintain higher productivity in the future, as we're projecting in the financial plan, more attention is going to have to be paid to, you know, pre-scheduling the service and building very tight runs. When I did my site visit, I was told that the majority of the trips were same day within 30 minutes of the time. The calls were made within 30 minutes of the time the trip was required. And that's really a taxicab type of service. And it is hard to plan the effective use of the vehicles with that kind of spontaneity. I realize you're a small community, but it's still, if demand, through time, the school population is going to decrease and the senior population is going to increase, and there's going to be more demand by seniors on the service. And based on our very limited public input, one of the things that was drawn to our attention is that individuals were not booking the service at bell times because it wasn't available. And one of the things through, you know, more careful advanced scheduling, you limit the amount of time that the buses are involved in school runs. I was just doing work in San Bernardino County, where they have a similar issue with general public Dial-A-Ride, their OmniLink service, and their biggest, you know, volume is our school trips, but they limit the schools to Yucaipa. They limit the school service to two buses out of five, and the other three are open for general public, you know, even during bell time. And in Chino Hills,
capacity of one bus, you're going to make two trips.
Well, you eventually make a trade-off. You either use both buses for the schools, or you limit the number of kids that can ride to the capacity of the bus, of one bus, and you make one trip. But that becomes a decision out of necessity, and I don't think you're there to make those decisions yet.
I don't think so either. But he said in the future.
In the future. I'm looking down the road too, okay? Because operating conditions change, demographics change, needs change, mobility needs change through time. And that's one of the things about the short-range transit plan process. It's good because it can catch those changes along the way before there's a big surprise. I'm one of the recommendations is, if you are going to, you know, put in more advanced scheduling, it market those improvements to the public so they know that, you know, these services are available, and they are available now. But it's just making them more aware of it so that they're not in public forums saying the service is never available, okay? Because it might be. Now, we talked about a recommendation where local merchants could be encouraged to actually buy Dial-A-Ride tickets for their customers. In other words, if I go into Albertsons to buy some groceries, and I buy $20 worth of groceries, they give me, Morro Bay Dial-A-Ride ticket. Okay? So, you know, and that, we found them doing that in Carson City to some success, where the stores, the grocery stores, were actually doling out. Like sometimes merchants, downtown merchants, dole out parking meter or parking vouchers. It's the same sort of concept, but it's supporting your service. And it's also supporting low-income people that are having difficulty with the fares, or saying they're having difficulty with the fares.
We tried that with the trolley, and it didn't seem like it went over very well with the merchant participation, the merchants providing tokens for the trolley for their customers.
I was thinking more industry, unless it already has, but it seems like there's some potential there.
Just a comment on that, because I think it was a really good idea, especially with a trolley. I wasn't sure that I thought it was a good idea with a dial-a-ride, because the dial-a-ride seemed to have the customers with the seniors, the low-income people, and the ADA people, whereas if you give out coupons at the grocery store, you're going to be giving them out to everyone, not just the selected people, and it might tend to limit the number of selected people, the people that were really your target people, from being able to get a ride.
You mean induced demand?
It might, yes.
I didn't think of that angle. But I guess the intent would be that, you know, regular users would get something back from the merchants that they patronize. But you're right; it could induce demand,
or just figure out another way to give it out to the selected groups without, yeah, you know, giving it out to everybody in the world. Yeah, I'm afraid that you'd be getting people that would not your target audience using it with that blanket way of giving it out at the grocery store.
Well, I think it could be targeted to seniors and persons with disabilities fairly effectively. And we'd have to rely on the stores to do it. But the main thing is you've got the money from the stores for the tickets up front, which is really good, okay? It helps the fare box recovery. Even if the people use the token or the ticket as a bookmark, you still got the money, okay? Now, you're already going into a joint procurement for Paso and... They're the... communities
the North County communities, Tascadero, Paso Robles, as well as several county and incorporated, like the Pomo or South Bay Dial-A-Ride, as well as RTA services and runabouts. So it's actually quite a few different services being offered. So the joint RFP process holds potential opportunity for cost savings. And so that's why we felt, even though we have extensions and we're happy with the contractor we have, it's an opportunity to see what savings there might be. If there are, we would jump on that. If not, then we would continue along extending the contract and going the way we are.
In terms of the longer range, is possibly looking at not only a joint, using that term consolidation. I don't think you want me using it either. But... because there is a danger with consolidation of losing local autonomy. It's something to go into very carefully. Okay. We talk about in fiscal year 08-09 reevaluating your operating costs, because with Dial-A-Ride, our financial plan is projecting an annual surplus. Okay. So there's a couple things you can do with a surplus. You can bank it for a rainy day. You can spend it on potentially unproductive service. Or is there any possibility, since you do have a very healthy fare box recovery with the trolley, moving some of that surplus from the Dial-A-Ride over into the trolley to either reduce or completely eliminate the general fund contribution? It's a thought. I don't, because you're not at risk. Like, that would mean you're applying TDA funds, and that's legitimate. And you're not at risk right now of being below the 10% fare box recovery.
Are we also, I don't know, Doug or Janine, either one of you might be able to answer that. Are those funds going to prohibit us to capital because we have so many issues where we have funds for capital but not for operations? Is it something that we could use as operation funds to match with capital grants and other sources?
Yes, our TDA funds are used as our local match, what they call our local match, for federal or state grants. Oftentimes they will only provide a grant amount of, say, 80. Typically it's 80% for, like, the federal for our vehicles. The other 20% of the project cost comes from the local match, and that's usually our TDA funds. In the case of the trolley, it's general fund.
So there are some neat things you could be doing with those surpluses. Okay, on the capital side or on the operating side of the trolley. Okay, it's a seed I would like to sort of to leave with you that might be of benefit. Overheads to do that service. Now, it had been suggested at the public or at our planning workshop that the trolley service should be expanded up there for tourism. However, the trolley is not a vehicle you want to be running on the highway.
It runs on the highway now.
Well,
I know, I've been on it. Trust me, it wasn't a very comfortable ride on the highway, but it does run,
you know,
only southbound. For a little while, just for a little while.
Okay, so, but to go further up the coast, I would not recommend it. And a cutaway bus like you use for the dialer ride can go on the highway with a lot more comfort and I would say safety.
I would agree with that.
Okay, but again, this would have to be done if you had the extra capacity and were guaranteed it was a benefit. Well, first of all, it should be a benefit to your community. In other words, bringing people down to spend their dollars locally. That would be an obvious benefit. And you would want to make sure that it's fully, you recover your costs 100% if you're going to be a good neighbor. Okay.
Other than raising a potential for income, what's the benefit to Morro Bay to have transportation, public transportation financed to Cayucas?
Sure. I honestly can't see any.
Are we even considering it?
Well, I'm saying
we were very much against it if it was not funded, because it's against our mission statement.
I would agree
for that. But I definitely, I mean, as a transportation writer, I think the only one here on the board, I've definitely heard people say that they'd like increase. But most of those people, not necessarily all the way to Cayucas, but to the north end of Morro Bay. When Route 12, the RTA bus comes in hourly from San Luis, it comes to City Park and no farther north. So people that live in the north end of town either need to walk, ride their bike, or get dial-a-ride to go the rest of the way. And the people that had suggested that Route 12 extend to Cayucas more frequently, or that Morro Bay go to Cayucas to supplement, were people that don't live in Cayucas but live in the north end of Morro Bay.
What about public buses, RTA bus? No buses go to Cayucas?
Only 3 times a day.
Well,
benefit, but that's kind of a future plan. I know that the biggest roadblock here on this board and on everybody that I've spoke with is that we shouldn't be taking resources away from our citizens in the city of Morro Bay to provide transportation outside of the city. That
I
it was
agree.
Direct, and that was the biggest complaint.
Well, that's where I'm coming from.
So since this new addition is that it would be 100% funded, that could be something that could be explored if we had the buses to do it. There was also the problem with the limited buses that we have, if we took one out of the city to make those runs, we'd be low on buses here during that time. Yep. But, you know, if the funding's available to do it, it could be something we could explore in the future.
And when you have limited public input, it's very difficult to respond to a few whispers, okay? But the cautious consultant puts it in as a recommendation not to do but to evaluate, you know, the feasibility and the potential for demand. And if you ever did put something like that in, or if the county did, it would have to be on a demonstration project basis with some real productivity and fare box recovery goals that would have to be met within the demonstration period.
If the county funded it, would we then be under the county auspices, or would we still have Morro Bay autonomy?
You would have yours, and you would, if under the, a scenario, you could be the contractor to the county.
Okay.
But not under, no, the county doesn't take you over as part of it. At least it shouldn't work that way, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, with the trolley, we're looking at, again, maintaining the existing service hours. You have, you know, planned this service to cover the core tourist, you know, season and hours when people are traveling. So it is a productive service. You know, it's a good service. It's not a wasted service. Now, when we say maintain the current service hours, we're assuming you're willing to continue putting general funds into it. Okay?
As far as the trolley?
Yeah.
The trolley was founded on general fund money. That was the whole purpose that the city council wanted to do that.
But sometimes the mood changes, okay, through time. So that's why I put that cautionary note in there. And that's why I also talked about possible surpluses from DAR being moved over into the trolley. Okay? So that's a possibility. You know, I did mention the recommendation about hopefully enjoy. Also, update the trolley brochure with, you know, good street maps showing where things are to scale, if possible, so that people have a sense of how the distance and where different attractions are located, and also the transfer points between the two different trolley routes. You know, it's, again, this becomes something that at a hotel desk they can hand out to somebody, and it's easy to understand for the customer. So I think that's an important thing. Now, one of the big themes in publicly subsidized public transit is that it can't do everything for everybody. It has its limits. Okay, and you know, there's people that did talk about improving the bus commute to San Luis Obispo, but you know, outside of Cal Poly and maybe the government center, the jobs in San Luis are dispersed and they aren't easy to serve with a bus, you know, or transferring to a local slow transit bus. So one of the more effective ways in small communities and rural populations is for the, you know, through the organization of van and car pools that might be employee based. So in other words, they pick up a small number of people that are going to an individual employer. Okay, and you know, we talk about, you know, coordination with regional rideshare and ride on to, first of all, determine the market for that, determine the here's the big thing, the willingness of regional employers to help organize car and van pools for their employees. Okay, that's a lot more effective use of public funds than running empty buses. Okay, so it's a way to handle the commute situation. And on the Route 12, the recommendations were, you know, based again on the public input, is one, try, and I couched these recommendations. RTA is going to be doing their own, you know, SRTP. So within the context of their own SRTP,
I'm coming home.
Now, what RTA will say is that it adds time to that trip, northbound trip, and it means a lot more recovery time. But there is the potential to, jargon time, interline. Actually take the 12, and when it gets to, you know, Morro Bay City Park, it becomes, instead of just laying over, it becomes the 11. And then
well, that's exactly what the route used to do,
well,
Doug. And,
well,
and this is where the problems came well, in with part of the changeover.
Sometimes change.
But there's only one route in the, of the Route 12 that lays over in Morro Bay. There's only one route a day that lays over in Morro Bay. The others continue on, either north or back to San Luis. There's only the route that comes in at 1213 to City Park, lays over for 1 hour.
They're claiming that if they put it back in, there would be more layover.
It would
increase the number of trips they're laying over.
If they put the northbound yeah. service back in.
So one of the things you do with a bus that's laying over, you get it to do, you put it into some kind of other revenue use. And, you know, again, the one that's close by is the 11.
Is the 11.
And that also would mean that they would be increasing the frequency on the 11 to an hourly frequency.
Right. The routes used to come from San Luis to Morro Bay, loop through Los Osos, and come back to Morro Bay and then San Luis. That used to be our standard yeah. route. And I'm not saying that it solves the problems and doesn't make more problems time-wise. I'm just saying it was a major drop-off for ridership between Morro Bay northbound and or between Morro Bay and north of Morro Bay to Cal Poly was that I can get there, but I can't get
yeah.
home.
You right. know, that or was, you have to go down for poor connections down in San Luis.
Well, actually, well, most of us just walk. We just walk out to the route. It's a little better that way, and it's better funding. If I leave Cal Poly and take a city bus, I'm a Cal Poly student, I slide my card, I don't pay for city transit. I get on city transit for free, I get a transfer. Now I only pay 75 cents to come home,
mm-hmm.
you know, which, you know, I don't mind paying less, but I wonder if the money's recovered, you know, for the fare box, you know, to come back up.
Well, that's one of the idiosyncrasies, and when you have a fare box recovery of 32%, you don't worry so much about
yeah,
those things.
Yeah, that's pretty high.
You know? If it was 20%, you would worry.
Up to 5 minutes.
Yeah, and but it doesn't often happen, but there are ways of it putting it into procedures, formally into procedures. And like I said, any of these Route 12 recommendations, RTA should be, we're suggesting they should be encouraged to review them within their own short-range transit plan. And that's something that the city could do is encourage them. You know, the city will be a partner in that study, won't they?
I would hope so.
Yeah. A stakeholder. So, I mean, that is something that you can push. That's pretty well covers the recommendations. Are there any sort of questions, comments, concerns?
I'd like to clarify one point on the so I understand that in terms of the excess fare box, the surplus in running the Dial-A-Ride because mm-hmm. of the very good fare box recovery. Is that surplus above and beyond the 10%? You never shave it down to that. You know, you don't want to. But is that money that surplus be used for transportation, or is it basically general fund money and anything the city council wants to
no.
do with it?
No, it's not general fund money.
Okay.
It has to stay in transportation.
Eliane, correct me if I get on thin ice here, but generally with TDA funds, they can be used for roadway maintenance if you've funded transit so that there are no unmet needs, reasonable yeah. unmet needs that you know that are out there.
Well, I was thinking in addition, not only the trolley, but some of the funding for which you suggested in least exploring about the employers and carpools. That's certainly an okay use.
The TDA situation is there are some TDA money that's called STA, and that is exclusively for transit. There is no room to play with the current.
We're talking about specific money here. You've identified that it because there's a surplus in running our Dial-A-Ride. Is that surplus? You know, I'm trying to get the list of options as to what that could be used for. One not mentioned is simply enhanced
those staffing that would be required to organize carpools?
As long as it's STA.
Is that a yes or a
no? What she's talking about is STA, State Transit Assistance Funds, which are one of two funds that make up the TDA that we're talking about. STA funds are a very, very small portion of the total Transportation Development Act funds that the city receives for our transit to use for our transit services. I think STA for the city, we're talking $12,000. So it's usually used up before it gets to a point of thinking about other things other than the dial a ride to be able to use it on. As far as using something like that for carpooling and van pooling, it is something that, that the city could consider. However, regional ride share and ride on, are those are things that they do, and this, I would be hesitant to have the city say, let's spend these transit funds
I'm
that we have available.
Proposing it.
Right.
I'm not
no,
proposing
I'm saying, but
I'm just trying to understand it, because when you go as far afield as road maintenance, and I understand what you say about all the needs met, but sometimes people, when they're not met, still declare they're met so money can be moved. And
Dr. Dorfman's really just trying to find out what the legal parameters are and where the possibilities of that extra money.
Okay, I will try to explain it a little differently. The city of Morro Bay received TDA from SLOCOG. That money comes from the state. The way it is allocated is per the city request as to how it's going to be used. So the LTF category, there are different uses other than transit. But if you are going to start the fiscal year and say you're going to spend so much, it would require stepping back and saying, oh, by the way, I really don't want to use it for this purpose. I want to use it for something else. And that's not a typical way that we handle the program.
And just to add to that, the city files a claim each year with the Council of Government that outlines how we use those funds. There's a transit category. There's our TDA audit. There's bikeways that's a requirement. Streets and whatnot.
So like bike, and then shift that money to the.
We have more transportation needs, so there's additional service for Saturday evening
That's
hours.
That's the unmet needs that they were talking about. Okay. That all of our
and
unmet
then,
needs have to be met before we could.
One other question: in previous presentation or previous staff reports, there's been discussion of the Sunday pilot, which is a pilot for remind me who what was the service?
The Sunday pilot project is something that came from the unmet transit needs hearing. It was requesting regional fixed route and paratransit Sunday service. It wasn't specifically for Morro Bay Dial-A-Ride Sunday service.
Yeah.
And so the pilot project, what happens, the Council of Governments holds the hearing. There's a set criteria to determine whether it's an unmet need. If it fits that, then it goes to a second round of determining whether it's reasonable to meet. The Council of Governments did that evaluation and determined the Sunday region-wide RTA service was an unmet need found reasonable to meet. They did a pilot established a pilot program to determine whether there is enough ridership and productivity. They have set standards of what it needs to achieve by the end of the pilot program to determine whether it is to continue on as a permanent, fully funded program.
And as I recall, where we left it off is the concern we had that that would affect Morro Bay's funds, because if a pilot became a permanent service, there was going to affect the funds available to Morro Bay, and it was under discussion as to what was going to happen.
It could potentially affect the contribution the city makes to RTA for its services. The city has a joint powers agreement with the seven cities in the county that created the regional service, and to fund that, there's a formula in there on who pays what and how. So if Sunday service for the regional system became permanent, that, of course, is going to increase their operating costs. And if it's not, if they're not able to get grants or some other kind of transportation funding, some other non-TDA source of funding to offset those additional expenditures, then it's made up in what comes from the local jurisdictions for our TDA. So potentially it could.
We're still at
but
risk.
But we don't know at that point.
I
at this point.
There were discussions that the regional entity recognized the problem for us in another city, because they're doing a pilot that puts our general fund basically at risk.
The Council of Governments is using discretionary STA money for the Morro Bay's and the City of San Luis's contributions for the pilot project. But beyond the pilot project, if it goes beyond that, that discussion has not been resolved because it hasn't gone to the Council of Governments to have that discussion.
So we're still potentially on the hook because
you're shaking.
It's complex.
Well, no, if it becomes a permanent program, we're potentially on the hook if they can't find other money for our contribution. And now I'm linking back to prudent reserve of any excess.
Well, it's also, too, maybe a little bit beyond the scope of the presentation that Doug's given us right now.
It was such a prominently discussed in the past, so I was looking for it. Now I understand why it's not there.
Right. And if you look at the, well, you can see it in the executive summary, page 8 of the executive summary that shows the Dial-A-Ride financial and operating plan, there is, no, it doesn't show it. It shows, it projects what the RTA's contribution is going to be for the five-year plan. And my understanding is that does not take into account a Sunday service. So potentially there could be an additional cost.
And when will they make a decision? Do you know?
The pilot program goes through February, and then presumably it's going to go to probably the advisory committees at some point for a review and recommendation to the COG board. So it might be March when that happens.
Plenty of time in anticipation of our fiscal year should it happen.
Any other questions, comments?
I have a couple of questions, but I think they might be for Janine more than for you, so
okay.
I'll wait until you're completed with your very fine presentation.
Well, I hope I kept it short enough for you.
Anybody else have any questions for Doug or comments?
I had one other question or comment. It was on recommendation 11, which was, I thought, excellent, the one about the trolley tokens, cooperating with the local hotels, motels. That was my question. I was just wondering if, for food for thought, is there any way to involve the state parks? Because I know quite a few people probably get on the trolley or get off the trolley at the state parks. Is there any way to involve them in that?
We can't force them to be involved.
But is there a way to discuss that?
I think good outreach would at least start a good dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I'm not sure what the exact response was monetarily when they tried to have the tokens for the trolley and the businesses get involved in that, and it just didn't seem like it was going very well. Maybe there wasn't enough communications, and maybe the right people and groups weren't contacted. You know, as Doug suggested, the hotels and motels, there is a hotel, hotel-motel association. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that's the same as the restaurant association in town.
No,
it's a different association. But, getting really connected with who the people are that are movers and shakers in those groups would be, a really good place to start. It does benefit them, and any place you go that you're going to check into a hotel or make reservations, there's a list of amenities, and shuttle services are important, and that would kind of be something like that.
Well, that was
but part those of... But those are future things for us as a small community to be working on. And, you know, they're not necessarily things that we can rely will be monetarily beneficial, but I think they could build. You know, if we kept the flames going under that, I think it could be beneficial.
That was my question that I was going to wait and ask Janine about, now that it's been brought up. I'd like to know if any of this has been approached to the, what's the name of that committee? Promotions Committee, getting them involved in marketing the trolley and the dial-a-ride, and getting them involved from the point of view of following the suggestion about tokens, etc., and including the state park that Jane mentioned.
My understanding of the Community Promotions Committee is that it is more about promoting Morro Bay outside of Morro Bay and getting people to come into Morro Bay. There's been discussion or thoughts in the past about adding in special focus once you're in Morro Bay, I'm not part of that committee, so I don't know. I did attend a Community Promotions Committee in November, and the trolley was part of the discussion, and there's interest in how do we get more people to use it, how do we make it more user-friendly. There was actually the discussion of the brochure and putting it in map form with spots and things like that. So whether that's the appropriate group?
I think it's a very appropriate group to get them involved. I mean, as you say, they're more interested in bringing people from the outside, too. But if we want people to return to Morro Bay, we got to give them something to enjoy while they're here. And this, to me, is an opportunity to involve the Promotions Committee, the Public Works, the trolley, the dial, all of it, for people once they're here, for the tourists as well as for the local residents. And if we start promoting it, we might increase the ridership.
And that was also discussed as well. And I had, it's kind of like dial-a-ride didn't exist to them.
Mm-hmm.
There was some talk about, you know, they're trying to promote kind of alternative forms of transportation. They take the plane or they take the train and they get into San Luis Obispo. And then how do we get them from there on public transportation into Morro Bay? But then once they get to Morro Bay,
there is no public transportation from the airport to here.
Then what? And the dial-a-ride was never really in the forethought of their minds as something to use as transportation once they got into town. It's much more frequent than the trolley service. It's year-round. Has more days and more hours. So I think there's opportunities for doing that, but whether it's turning, I don't know whether it's turning it over to the Promotions Committee is the appropriate way, or just more working through
working with them.
Look, the Promotions Committee and these other
committee out of it.
These other groups
look at the
like
disaster on that outdoor board they did down there on the street, which is an amateur production if you ever saw one.
Well,
people are going by at 60 miles an hour and they have to see it in a half a second or it's a failure.
I would like to see us have the Promotions Committee involved in marketing the trolley.
I'd like to see us maybe if we can stay focused on Doug's presentation and what we need to do with this, because what we're getting into is more longer-term operations of marketing within the city.
Well, it's recommendation 11.
He does have some good recommendations there, but what I'm saying is this is going to be an advisory recommendation to council, including public hearings, if we go that route. And I think these are things that we can probably carry on past this point so that we can kind of work on some of the specific things that Doug has in his presentation.
Well, then let me ask you this. Will this be presented to council, the opportunity to include the Promotions Committee in marketing the trolley?
All the comments from this meeting will be forwarded to the council, so that would be included in with it.
Fine. That's all I need to know at this moment. I do have a second question, but I'll defer and wait till others.
Well, here we go in promotions. I have some of Bill's concerns. And I think the Promotions Committee is a forum that needs education, but not involved turning over to, and that should be very clear. It does have all the right people. It have the chamber, the various associations in it. It's very external focused with a huge advertising budget. And I think the link, it's more an educational link, and this gets into the involvement.
to the degree that they are pursuing the ecotourism, the package of you don't need your car fits. That's the grabber because of the way they're planning.
And it's not turning it over to promotions. It's including them.
Exactly. And the chamber is already involved to the degree that they handle the advertising right now.
They have in the past when the previous director was there. As she was transitioning out, it was unclear who was going to do that, so we had made an arrangement with our current contractor who provides transit to do the same function.
I think that's just as good.
And during this discussion at the Community Promotions Committee, Peter Candela with the Chamber of Commerce had expressed an interest in maybe revisiting having the chamber do the promotion or the aspects of obtaining advertisers for the trolley. That's what it was about. Peter Candela is the new director for the chamber. And so discussion, we haven't had discussions yet with the chamber about what next season's going to be and how that might work. Another thing to consider with Community Promotions Committee is I don't know what their mission statement is as far as the reason that it was created as an advisory body or a committee and what they are charged to do with, but that's all that would all be under the purview of the council in creating their bylaws. So if it's something that the council desired to add certain things in addition to what they currently do, that would have to go through council.
Here we go. I think there'd be no problem giving a presentation trying to say what would your involvement or your interest be, because I have enough familiarity with community promotions that anything that borders on promotion, internally or externally, they'll hear just for informational purposes. And so I think there'll be no problem in doing that.
May I ask the second question?
Absolutely.
Maybe this is for Doug. You mentioned senior discounts at one point, and I forgot where, and I was just curious whether or not, one, we are maintaining a senior discount as well as a discount for handicapped.
Yes, we are.
And is that included in this new, in this?
In the budget.
In the budget, thank you. What about children, kids, like during the summer? Is there a pass that a parent can buy?
We don't use the summer youth pass, do we, for Dial-A-Ride?
The city does the Regional Transit Service has a summer youth pass program, and we have, and it's for fixed routes only, and we have participated in that for the trolley, but we as a city don't have a particular summer type pass for kids during the summertime. For the Dial-A-Ride or even the trolley.
Kids under a certain age, they're free.
Right. For the Dial-A-Ride, it's under a certain age. For the trolley, it's under a certain height. And it's a free, child-free with a fare-paying adult.
Is this something we need to address immediately, or this is something that's ongoing and it's being continually revamped, et cetera, as moods and needs change?
The policies for fares for children have pretty much been the same since I started working here. So the only thing would be to make a determination as to whether the number of free rides we're giving away is becoming so much that if we created a special child fare, might that help the fare box ratio, but might that also deter those children from now riding? So, but if, to this point, it hasn't become an issue yet.
Do you know what the free age is on the Dial-A-Ride?
I believe it is 5 and under.
One of the things about generally in transit, I'm not speaking for your community, but generally in transit, seniors and youth don't mix well on the same bus, especially during school times, because they're just in your face, and seniors do find it, it discourages them from using a bus if there's a lot of youth use of the bus. Now, that's just a general sort of transit industry sort of norm. Mendocino County, I know one, well, it could have been two summers ago, tried a summer pass. I deal with the marketing person up there quite regularly. I could, you know, for the council meeting, I could come back with what happened to that, whether or not it meant anything to ridership or it was actually used. That was a county, but that was a county-wide pass, you know, to get up and down the coast and over to Kaya. So, I mean, I'll bring some more information on that when I come in January.
Is there any other questions for Doug at this point? Janine, on your recommendations, the staff recommendations, you're a staff person, you're only suggesting here on the 2 points that we not adopt recommendation number 2 and that we adopt recommendation 3 only with those 3 bullets. What about the rest of the recommendations? Are you suggesting that we leave that open to council and public hearing?
Well, if you read the recommendation from staff, it's that the City Council hold a public hearing to consider adoption of the plan, which would include all recommendations with the exception, unless changes are made in the final plan, for those 2 points. So they would include all the other.
And some of them, there was one here that looked like it contradicted. I think it was recommendation 1, maintain Morro Bay Dollar Ride service hours, ceiling of 4,500. Is that where we are now? Is that maintaining at the current through the 5-year plan? And then down here further, it looked like it was exploring increasing. I'm not sure.
That was evaluate whether or not you will have surplus. So it's assuming you still have surplus. It's evaluate whether or not you want to expand the service.
Yeah, it was number 8. It just kind of looked like that was, no. Was that a contradiction, or is it just the exploration, maintain
just keep the door kind of open.
Okay. That kind of makes me feel a little bit more comfortable with number 1.
But I really caution any type of service expansion, please set them up as demos so that you're really knowing that it's not going to drag your fare box recovery down.
Yeah.
You've got a wonderful cushion right now.
Yeah, we've even talked on this board about having our own unmet needs hearing here within the city. It's a little off topic, but I'll offer this to you. Doing research and the surveys, you know, of course, I was one of those people that was very, very disappointed with the survey format. I rode Route 12 10 trips the week that the surveys were being done and watched a really, really poor survey gathering methods. The person gathering the surveys randomly asked people whether or not to fill out the survey, did not find any mechanism for asking each person or handing it to each person. 10 people might walk by them that they didn't even address, and then they'd say, would you mind filling this out, to the 11th person. It was very, very haphazard. And we could probably pull a little more together. I mean, I didn't give you any data to work with. It was very disappointing for me to hear a few people that have opinions that would come out, and like you said, 2 people. I know who both of them were.
That didn't count. You weren't counted in the 2, by the way.
No. I wasn't counted in the 2 because I met with you afterwards. I couldn't make any of those. But, I mean, what I'm saying is I know both of the people that went. And one of them was a North Morro Bay person,
right.
and their complaint was, well, I can't get from where I want to be, you know, to where I need to go. And sometimes it's give and take a little bit. But sometimes if we work a little bit better in a small community, maybe we can get a little more response. I know the response to the Morro Bay Dial-A-Ride survey previously had a much better success rate. And sometimes, you know, that's just the familiarity of people.
Yeah.
I know that on the Route 12 buses and on the runabout buses in particular, with most of those passengers disabled, they weren't able to fill out the surveys. Either for vision problems or for other cognitive abilities, they simply were not able to respond. And I saw a lot of that on the Route 12 buses as well, where people were not able to physically write, you know. Just some suggestions for the future. Those were some of the problems that I saw. You know, people getting on the bus,
either not being given enough time to fill out the survey or being asked in a way that didn't encourage them at all, and very, very haphazard. I would guess that, you know, the times that I rode overall, I would probably say maybe 30% of the people were even asked if they would fill out a survey. And then the response, you know, of the people asked would obviously be less than that. So that was something that I wanted to give you feedback on, not a complaint. We know when we ask the public, we don't hear unless they're ready to complain after we've made a decision, so it's really hard.
Raise fares.
If I could just follow up real quickly, something that was the lack of input or response from, you know, dial ride drivers, trolley drivers, as well as the RTA drivers was kind of disconcerting, because you're wanting to get that input so that you're able to develop something that is responsive to their needs. But one of the things that was kind of encouraging, and I don't remember whether I actually alluded to this in the staff report, is that even though there was very limited public input for the dial ride and the trolley, some of the comments and things that did come out ultimately was kind of supported by the survey that we had done for the dial ride back in 2005, getting some of the same, and we had a much better response rate for those who used it. And so it was confirming some of the things that did come up in the surveys that were done for this, even though they were very limited. So I would have loved to have more response, it was I was a little more comfortable with that for the dial-a-ride portion, because it was kind of being backed up by a previous survey that had a much larger response. So that was kind of helpful.
I move that we forward the report to the City Council with our recommendation to hold the public hearing to consider adoption with the following exceptions, unless there are changes made to the final plan that will be presented to the City Council, and then basically the staff recommendation as is.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Is unanimous.
Okay. I have another motion. I move that should any consideration be given that as I move that as part of the consideration of the use of surplus funds, we request the City Council to hold or to authorize us to hold an unmet needs hearing.
Asking City Council to authorize us to hold
a hearing on unmet needs in relation to, or they may want to hold it. It's just to get it. I'm trying to get on what you said. At some point, we've talked about it.
I want to, when Janine's done writing, I want to get her legal expertise on the requirements of unmet needs. Would we have the authority to hold that? Does it have to come through Council?
I didn't mean it so through with it. Well, okay. I didn't mean a big formal thing, just to have one of our usual ones, but that we're going to do it. Cause
how about a motion to have City Council explore within the next 6 months the possibility of unmet needs hearing within the city? Is that?
Yeah, that's much better wording, because they can decide who has it, but we got it on the agenda. I second.
He's going to second mine.
I withdraw mine and second.
Part of the TDA requirements is that an unmet needs hearing annually be held in order to determine whether there are transit needs that have not been met yet that TDA funds can be used for before they could be used for other things such as street and road projects.
And the county holds that, but we're not prohibited from having our own within the city.
The county holding the annual unmet needs hearing fulfills the city's requirement for it. It does not preclude the city from having its own. The city of Paso Robles, I believe, does their own hearing as well. They have more money than we do. But the city has not in the past held their own hearing, because we have always used 100% of our TDA funds on existing services. It was felt that you might be raising hopes of people that new services may be offered, expansion of services may be offered, and you'd hold the hearing, they'd give their input, and they'd be told, thanks, but we can't do it because we don't have the money. With there being a projected surplus, that may be something that the council wants to consider changing in the future, how do we want to continue to spend our TDA money and these additional surplus funds? Do we want to focus on additional services to the Dial-A-Ride? Do we want to open up to a public hearing for other needs that might be out there that don't necessarily get expressed in the regional unmet needs hearing? Because, well, I mean,
I know a lot of the folks from the city don't make it to the unmet needs hearing.
And I think part of that might be an education process. You are not required to go to San Luis Obispo on that day. You can email them. You can telephone them. You can send a handwritten letter in the old-fashioned mail. It's not just going down there that day. But that said, there is an opportunity. But generally, people from Morro Bay have not participated in the past, and whether that's because we're great at providing all the needs for transportation or not,
I think a lot of it is public education.
But it has not, the response from Morro Bay has not been readily apparent. There have been a few requests in the past. One was for Sunday Dial-A-Ride service that was found to be an unmet need but not reasonable to meet because of the funding issue. So there are a few that have come up over the years, but in general, responses from Morro Bay have not gone on, and whether that's because there's truly no need, which I don't know that could be the case,
right,
or that it's an education process and they're just not aware that, hey, I have all these other options to provide my input and I don't have to go down there on that day, is not clear.
I think to me,
I want to explain a little bit better what the public hearing is at SLOCOG. Is just the region gathering of input coming from everywhere else, and there is no real issue about simply having information gathered by the city of Morro Bay, whether it is a public hearing or not. However, if you want to participate in this cycle, the deadline is going to be the middle of February, so it doesn't give you a lot of time to advertise or come up with, location and make people aware.
Right.
We certainly encourage local jurisdiction to take that on simply because we believe there will be more participation.
That's my idealistic goal, is the fact that if we could find a way to outreach more, frankly, they're not going to come to us. We're going to need to hunt them down. And it's going to take outreach, and it's going to take people who are familiar faces. It's going to take communication. It's going to take a lot of effort to get people more involved and to make sure that they understand that they have an avenue. And like I say, idealistic, it might be completely fruitless, but I'm determined to try to find a way to solicit the input so that we're better educated about what our people want. Mm-hmm. And I know that may not work. Janine brought up an important point, which I wasn't really thinking about, and that is the expense of public hearing. And, that the money is always a drawback. Joan, could you read me back the motion that I...
The initial motion. Barry's.
Barry made a motion.
Well, we can. That's
I did not get it.
If we have a moment of discussion, it's whether we want to send a motion getting on the table the idea that we want to have a local discussion. And my original thought, in the way I proposed it, was that there'll be a report people are going to see, and it'll be presented that there's this surplus. And so, what do you do with it? Money we didn't know we had. And so before decisions are made, which may be to keep it as a rainy day,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that any all I was wanting is that part of the process be involving the public to tell us more before a decision is made what to do with it.
And it
that's
may be
all
a,
part
it
of the
may,
public.
It may be a step to try to educate, to outreach to the public, to get them involved in the public hearing that we're asking the council to hold.
But it's really our local needs, since this is very local money. It's not the regional dimension.
It might help to know how much money you're talking about.
Yeah, we won't know.
Ten.
$35
How much?
Well, it was. Oh boy, I've got it. Dog-eared here. Hold on.
Yeah, but $35 we
should. No, it's
page 8 of the executive summary, table ES.2. And they have listed two different operating cost scenarios, and depends on inflation and whether it's ends up being 3%, 5%. Each year lists what the potential projected balance is afterwards.
And remember, in the recommendations, we said that just let it ride until 08, 09, and then have a look to see what your operating costs really are.
Yeah, well, I'm not a big one for divvying up money we don't have yet.
And see what the surplus situation is, and then look at
options. But to answer Bill's question, what range are we talking about?
Well, it's up to the council anyway. You know,
no, I just want to know the magnitude of money.
It's the council's prerogative to deal with that stuff, though.
Oh, yeah.
So,
but it's our prerogative to put in our two cents, as what we suggested.
It would vary, like if you look at projected 07, 08, depending on whether it's the 3% or 5% cost increase, between $50,000 to $55,000. 08, 09, between $50,000 to $60,000.
That would be the surplus?
The surplus for that 1 year.
Yeah, for that. So that's substantial. And if you kept half of it for rainy day, so you're talking about enough money to actually do projects.
The council will have to make that decision.
No, I'm not talking that we should make that decision. But
you have to tell them to make it, because they'll do it anyway.
No, I'm not telling them to make it. I'm simply suggesting that we, as an advisory board, say we think a public hearing on of the unmet needs type should be held as part of the process. That's all, and we have the prerogative to make it.
We're supposed to advise the council on what they ask us to advise them about.
Which is this report.
Yeah, but that's going beyond it.
Well,
I think, anyway.
Well, is there any more discussion about the motion that was on the floor? We've lost a member already.
May I ask you second in the motion?
Barry had seconded the motion.
Okay.
Well, we don't know what the... Since we
and
have
I asked
to
for
restate
on the
it and we don't have it, I think we should decide, since the recommendation is let it ride.
Okay. Then I'll withdraw my motion.
It's premature, gotten too obtuse here.
I'll withdraw the motion for lack of support.
But I think staff will relay the feeling, certainly.
Okay.
Do we want to make one more attempt? Do we want to try and fashion a motion that simply alerts the council to our view about involving the community promotions?
I think perhaps maybe going to the council meeting for public comment would be a good way to do that.
That, and as mentioned earlier, your comments from tonight
go into the staff report.
It will go in. They will see that.
Part of minutes or the staff report?
Part of minutes, part of staff report. Okay. Since there were a few things that were touched on by the board that seemed to be of interest, so we can certainly flesh that out and include that.
Okay. And we're asked for a brief break before we move on to our next item. Is all in favor for?
Depends on how long the next item is going to be.
Darren, how long do you anticipate going?
I'll go fast.
Especially now.
Did we thank Doug for his presentation? I think he did a great job.
Thank you, Doug. Yeah. Thank you for coming down. Thank we appreciate it.
I think it'll be a contribution to us in Morro Bay.
Definitely appreciate the revisions. Okay. Okay. Thank you. And we'll be back in about 4 or 5 minutes.
Hey, good evening for round two. We are back with the Public Works Advisory Board meeting live here Wednesday, the 20th of December, and we're continuing with item 10B. It's a presentation by Darren Brown, a transportation planner with the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, SLOCOG, regarding the San Luis Obispo North Coast Scenic Byways condition plan and the North Coast Scenic Byways logo and the Community Gateway Program. And Darren, thank you very much for joining us tonight, and thanks for holding out through our otherwise busy evening.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. I guess I couldn't really blame it because it was my cohort that was taking up so much time anyway. So I will make this really quick. Like you said, this is an informational item. I just wanted to, I'm bringing this presentation to a number of councils and boards up and down the North Coast of the area of the byway corridor. So these are the topics I'm going to be going over. It's basically an update of where we're at in the program. You have a very early admin draft in your packet, and we're also going to be looking at a draft scenic byway logo and the Communities Gateways program, which is a new program that was recently funded. Just a little background. I'm sure you all know that Highway 1 from the northern city limits to the northern county line, should say northern city limits of San Luis Obispo, Highland Drive, basically Cal Poly, up to the northern county line is a designated All-American Road, which is the highest tier of designation for the country. Just for put in perspective, only 28 other roads hold that designation, that level of designation in the whole country. So it's quite a prestigious little designation that we have. The byway corridor plan, which is in your packet, is a required plan for all American roads and National Scenic Byways, so we have to maintain the plan. We did it back in 2003 when we were pursuing the designation, and we're updating it just to improve it somewhat and just to kind of revisit some of the issues, the priorities primarily in there. We've been very successful over the last couple of years, one of the more successful byways at receiving grants as a planning and programming agency, which is what SLOCOG is. We saw the designation from a programming point of view to be able to provide another funding source to go after grants. It's not a huge grant source. It's only $25 million a year for the entire country, so it's relatively small, but so far we've been pretty successful with it. And SLOCOG is advised by a Scenic Byway Advisory Committee, of which City of Morro Bay is one of nine voting members, as well as just all the other communities up and down the Scenic Byway Corridor. We do have, because it is a 58-mile corridor, we do try to get as many key stakeholders as we can involved. These are our entire list of membership, but we kind of have a two-tiered system where we have voting members and non-voting members, and it was basically, we tiered it basically because we just couldn't get the participation that we were looking for, as you guys are.
As we
will
know.
I have a question, please.
Excuse me.
Why is Morro Bay beautiful twice?
Are they on there twice?
Yes, and what is Ventana Wilderness? I've never heard of that before.
Morro Bay Beautiful is on there twice for no good reason.
As a member, I'm delighted they are. But
you get two votes.
We get two votes.
It was a
totally but what is Ventana Wilderness, please?
The Ventana Wilderness is a something that actually was a suggestion from your liaison to our SLOCOG board. Councilwoman Winholtz suggested that they be on it. Ventana Wilderness is up north of the county line in the little bit west of Highway 1, or I'm sorry, a little bit east of Highway 1. I don't know exactly totally what it is. It was a suggestion that got approved by our SLOCOG board. I got a contact, and she gets our mailings, but I've never heard from their contact at all, so I'm not exactly sure.
Well, thank you for trying.
Yeah.
Okay.
And their group of
surf riders is not a trail maintenance people and supporters of the town. Hmm. It's a beautiful resource. I'm sorry, we're recording this. We can't hear.
Okay. That's a good point.
And also Los Osos Chamber of Commerce. They have a chamber.
Los Osos Chamber of Commerce. Los Osos technically isn't in the corridor.
Okay. Understand.
But yeah, definitely put, we can put...
I would approach Surfriders.
Surfrider, yeah, that's... It's been a slowly growing list over the last couple of years. People always come forward with good recommendations, and we'll just add them to the non-voting list, and we listen and involve any participation that anybody comes forward with. You don't necessarily have to be a voting member.
One of our commissioners is on Surfrider, Noah Smuckler. He's co-chair of Surfriders.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, so this is the plan, basically. It was just a quick, cursory plan update. Basically, we're going through the insurance equalities and updating the protections. We didn't do much on that. It's basically basically just taking that stuff over from the last plan. But really, we concentrated on making the document a little bit more user-friendly and updating the priorities, as well as trying to beef up the interpretive and the signage element, which I'll explain in a couple minutes as well. So in your document, you will see a map like this, the nuts and bolts of this, where it comes, the rubber meets the road as far as Morro Bay is concerned, is in Section 2 in the planned improvements. And really, the focus, a large section of the focus that we have seen as the highest, probably the highest priority of improvements in the corridor is the Morro Bay section, simply because you are... one of the very limited urban areas within the actual byway corridor, and there's been some expressed interest within the community of Morro Bay to improve that area section of how your community interrelates with the highway through that section. So we've identified a number of projects that basically was driven by your staff and your North Main specific plan. And so we have a lot of improvements in there. Some of them are funded now, some of them are not. The Gateways program that I'll be talking about in a couple minutes is funded. Some other little pieces and parts in there of those improvements that are on there are some hardscape improvements. Caltrans just recently got a grant. I'm not sure if they've come before your board yet, but I think they will. And they got about $1.5 million or so to do some improvements out on Highway 1 for aesthetic beautification and things like that, fencing improvements, excellent, things of that nature. So, yes.
Can you give a one-minute description of what fencing improvements might look like along in Morro Bay?
It's a good question, and we have not gotten to that level of detail
what
yet.
Kinds of things people talk about when they say fencing improvements. I'm thinking mainly the barbed wire fence.
Right. Basically, the idea was people don't like how the fencing separating North Main and the highway is, and basically just come up with a design that both maintains the scenic viewshed from east of the highway, but make it a more aesthetically pleasing fence. So as far as the design goes, it hasn't gotten near to that level of specificity. We've only had one meeting to kick it off, and but your staff has been involved and they're well aware of it.
Okay, because that's a point I think the public, what's the timeline? Because I'm thinking about the problems we had with the median. Uh-huh. And at the last minute found out with the median going south of town, which would have been a pretty bad median had not Ray McGillicutt got on top of it. And so I think
concrete.
The concrete, they were going to have this concrete median. And so I think knowing early on when those discussions will take place as to what the different design kind of options are for that kind of fencing would be pretty important, because I think it'll be public interest.
Yeah, I think they've learned their lesson through that experience. They heard loud and clear that the community was not happy with having a concrete proposed without any public outreach. So I think they've heard that. Next steps for the plan. I'm coming to all these advisory committees up and down the corridor looking for input. Take your time. We're kind of looking to close a review in the next 2-3 weeks. But really, we're just kind of soliciting some public input as much as you guys can. Like I said, it's a very early admin draft. You'll see all kinds of this section not completed and probably grammatical errors all over the place, and it's just kind of a working draft, so I apologize for that. And so this is the schedule as we're moving forward, and hopefully either February 7th or more than likely April, SLOCOG board action for approval.
Darren, could you let us know who is our Morro Bay representative with you on this project? Do we have a single representative, or is it staff in general?
It's staff in general.
Staff in general. So if we have suggestions or comments, do we direct them directly to you?
Bill or me. Bill Boucher or me.
Okay. Thank you.
As far as the Scenic Byway logo, this is something that after we got the designation, the byway designation, we wanted to, one of the first things is to try to convey to the traveling public that they're actually on a National Scenic Byway. And so one thing that we have not done, but we're ramping up and we just got a grant for, is to prepare a logo and to put some byway signage out on the byway so that people know that they're on a byway. And not only out on the highway, but also on ancillary facilities, down on your harbor walk, perhaps, the Morro Bay Caicos Connector. There's some other, you know, lots of these ancillary facilities where travelers that come to Morro Bay will understand that there's kind of this continuity of experience in the corridor, not just when they're on the highway. And these are the types of things they'd be used on, like I said, highway signage, off-highway signage, interpretive signage, things that you guys are going to have down at the Harbor Walk, and then visitor materials and letterhead, stuff like that. Yes?
What is the process of developing the logo?
It's been kind of an informal one. We actually just went to Cal Poly for a class, got five different logos produced by this class.
Okay.
We took it before the Scenic Byways Advisory Committee, and basically they whittled it down to one that basically rose quickly to the top.
So it's kind of done?
It's not kind of done. We're looking for much input as we...
Depending on the timeline and capacity, that's very nice. There was I wouldn't necessarily go down to grammar school like they did, but because we had to develop a signage for no smoking...
Uh-huh.
You know, it went through the schools, different grade levels, and of course there were some stuff out of senior high school, you know, out of high schools that was pretty good. So again, maybe opening it up to, because Quest is pretty heavy duty art wise, just opening it up, and you still, someone will have to whittle them down, but the more people, although that looks pretty good.
Yeah, we were pretty pleased with it. We wouldn't...
Just a thought on...
Yeah.
More impressive.
Yeah, thank you. And yeah, we kind of grappled with how we wanted to do that. Did we want to do a full community contest? Do we just want to go to a consultant? Did we go to a graphic artist? And it turned out that my supervisor knew one of the graphic artists professors over there, and that opportunity kind of arose. And so this is what we have right now as far as a logo that is leaning toward a preferred alternative. We've heard only good things about it so far. A couple of the recommended changes that we've heard a number of times is trying to turn those white polygons on what is basically Bishop's Peak on the left there to a gray color so it doesn't look like snow. And maybe dulling down or even getting rid of the sun rays, because a lot of people think it looks like the Japanese war flag, and there's been that suggestion that it kind of resembles that. And so we've had a number of those are the two things that basically jump out at people.
I understand they did pass a resolution that any logo must have the rock in it.
And it does.
Well, I can say my plus points for the ADA compliant font. That's very nice.
What was that? I'm sorry.
Where are these logos going to be? Are they like a freeway sign?
They're going to be incorporated.
That are going to be passed by at 65 miles an hour?
They will. They certainly won't be this design, but I'll show you the next slide. This is one idea for a highway sign, kind of the same logo incorporated.
Because my recommendation would be to keep it simple.
Mm-hmm. And we've heard that too.
It is. And this is a little busy, as was the previous one, to me.
To the naked eye, as you're going by at
65, 70 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Now, if you're going to have these on, are these just...
Nope. not just highway signs. Are you going to be try to be out on the highway so that it, kind of like the California scenic poppy? You see that?
That's a great sign.
It is.
Why are we eliminating that?
We're not. We kind of, because that's a state scenic highway logo. And so basically we've imagined this and the poppy right next to one another. State scenic highway designation, national scenic highway.
Well, you know, one of the things that was started by Lady Bird Johnson was to eliminate signs because we have highways in the past that are so overcrowded with signs. And now we're talking about adding more signs, having already gotten rid of a lot of signs.
Yeah, and
is there a discussion going on at the moment as to how many?
There absolutely is, and it's actually come up quite a bit in the last couple of months, and I've actually heard perhaps from your promotions committee. Somebody called me from the community. Actually, I've had two people talking about signs. I think there was some discussion at one of those meetings about signage. How can we get people to go toward the Embarcadero, to the Rock, or the, where there's not any highway signage out there really pointing in to some of your better attractions. And so one of the things that we're going to be doing as a follow-up to this plan, which will be basically an appendices to the plan, is going to be an entire signage plan for the byway corridor. And so we're going to address every single sign on the corridor where there's opportunities to get rid of signs or consolidate signs, and in this instance, add signs. And so we're going to be trying to take the whole gamut and try to
approach. Will there approach be public input
from
each of the communities?
Yeah, there'll be huge amount of public input because that's probably the biggest thing that I've heard most of. People don't really care about the plan that I'm bringing forward. They like the logo, but I have been hearing lots about highway signage. So that will be a definite public outreach event.
Well, my taste would be to keep it simple and direct.
And a lot of people have been expressing that point of view.
Yeah. Now, has nothing to do with Morro Bay's gateway signs, does it? This is a separate
thing.
The whole thing about the byway signage is separate from what we as a community are doing with our gateway signs.
Yes.
Thank you. That's all I wanted to know.
So, the Community Gateways Program. That was what he was just asking me about, and basically it was a grant that we just received from the National Scenic Byways Program for about a little over $300,000. LOCOG matched those funds, grant program, and historically this is at the higher end of dollar amounts that they'll approve. And so really the fund estimate is not correct. It's just simply what we believe that we could go after in that grant program. And so we kind of imagine having some local funds come forward. We've heard from SLO that they're going to be able to come forward with some money as well as us matching some funds. So that's just really early. It sounds like your staff has brought that forward to you, or I don't know how you were aware of it, or just was it because that it's in your staff report? What's that?
What forward?
You were just asking about the Community Gateways Program.
Oh, it was merely just a question because the Morro Bay is at this time is going through a whole revamping of their gateway signs. And I saw gateway signage and I was curious if you were connecting this with our gateway signage. You're not. The question
is
moot.
This is actually the logo and this are two totally separate programs. So really the way we're approaching this is basically we just got $400,000 to do some gateway signs, and we're kind of imagining that being broken up five different communities. And so really we kind of you're starting out with about $80,000 or $90,000 to work toward a gateway signage. What's that?
What you're saying is it can be part of, it can augment what's being done in
Precisely.
The city. It's some unknown amount of funds that can be used in the gateway sign program of the city.
Yes, precisely.
Because the idea is that cities along the byway all want to say, y'all come and stay with us.
Correct.
And that's what our gateway signs are about.
Correct.
Gateway.
Yeah, it seems like all the communities seem to want them. Everybody kind of wants to have a defined line to their community. And this is kind of, we went after this grant because we knew that it was a popular program and that the communities were interested. San Luis Obispo said that they want to match funds with these funds, and we've heard from your staff that you guys might have some funds to match with these funds and get your guys' gateway program done as well.
Well, now I'm a little confused.
I apologize for that.
That's all right. I'm easily confused at my age.
There's three separate agenda items that Darren's covering in his presentation.
No, I just want to talk about, have money to put into our gateway signage?
Oh, yeah.
They do.
He said that Bill has told them the city may have some money to do the match to get the money.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, this is brand new money, and yes, they know that now. So with that, it's just starting off. Since we're going to be coming for the plan and for the logo and trying to elicit as much information, we just wanted to let you know that this money's coming forward and that it's going to be moving forward. We're working with your staff, and you'll be seeing it come forward again. One thing that we have asked is if National Scenic Byway funds do contribute a very large portion to your signage, your gateway signage, that you... So we've seen your sign, and we think that it's a fine sign, but we would like it to go through the Byway Advisory Committee, of which you guys are obviously a voting member, and to consider putting a Byway logo in it somewhere. So I'll just throw those two caveats out there.
Okay. Let me ask a question. It says project completion 2008. Is that just for the gateway signs? What is that for?
Yeah, that's just for the gateway signs. We'd like to – that's the goal right now, is to get some gateway signs up on the road by 2008. So with that, I can answer any questions, or you can feed me comments as you look through the plan and look through the logos and stuff like that.
Okay. Darren, would you mind giving us and the public that are watching your contact information?
Sure. Email is dbrown at slocog.org, and phone number is 781-5764.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
A quick question, Paige. We had, this has to do with a presentation we had on the, quite a bit of detail on the bikeways between Morro Bay and Cayucas.
Yeah.
Is the funding for that part of this, or it's just the design? I see the paragraph dealing with it on page 28.
Page 28, I don't even have a plan.
It simply says perhaps the most critical and difficult capital project in the Byway Corridor dealing with a off-way bicycle is the Morro Bay Cayucas. And it concludes with how great it'll be, but the project has significant obstacles to its completion and will be a considerable public investment. I'm really just trying to understand, was the prior presentation a subcomponent of this?
It is one of those things, and I don't have the authority to program $2.5 million on a project. So I can only...
Can we give that to you?
We'll vote it tonight.
No, I'm not sure if that's the project cost, but it will be considerable. It won't be a couple hundred thousand dollars. Yeah. It'll be significant.
I remember that.
So... Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much, Darren, and thank you for waiting through the rest of our lengthy meeting. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's move on to future agenda items. I have three things here already. Yes, sir? Oh, I'm sorry. Were you wanting to speak on...
Mr. Davis, you were here...
I just came to watch Darren.
Oh.
Okay.
Sorry, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Roger thought I was neglecting you, that you wanted to speak on this, so that was the issue. We so seldom have audience members. It makes us feel special. Okay, I have three agenda items, actually possibly only two, for January's meeting, the Wi-Fi. We want to bring that back to the board. And also, this was NOAA's, and from the letter from the bike committee, I'm not sure if it got resolved or not. He wanted to bring up the North Main bike issue.
Yes, he did.
Did that get resolved? Do you know?
I have no idea.
Okay.
And with staff not being here, I'm not sure.
Okay. I'm going to put an asterisk on that one, and I'll call staff and find out whether or not that's a go.
The other thing was trees, our city street trees, the issue with the problem of the policy, whether or not we are getting replacement as we're told we're supposed to have. That had to do with...
No, we aren't.
Well, I think we need to address it. If we've been told numerous times by staff that there is a 1-to-1 replacement for disease trees and a 2-to-1 replacement for non-disease trees, and yet when Mr. Boucher was questioned on that last month, he said there wasn't really a policy, and we need to find out.
There is a city policy for trees on streets, public
but
trees.
There doesn't seem to be any mechanism for accounting for it. For instance, if you went into the planning department and said a tree came out of X address for construction, where is that tree replaced? No one seems to be able to tell you.
That's a good reason to bring it forward.
So that's the issue. If there's no mechanism for accounting for it, then the policy's useless.
I would.
And also, you wanted the global trees issue. We were talking about tying those things in. I know they're different.
Yeah.
This month, because staff had these reports for us. And then February, we'll get into elections for chair and vice chair again. So
the biggest problem is city-owned trees. They never get replaced.
Well, that seems to be part of the problem.
Yeah. Well, let's have a discussion on that.
And they said that there was a list of people who wanted trees if they couldn't be put back on the same place.
Right.
But there are people waiting for trees, but they're trees that aren't going in, and that was completely... That didn't make any sense to me.
I didn't understand that either at the time.
I'd also encourage, in the meantime, maybe any of us as individuals to go in and see if we can get any answers. But I think this would be a good advisement to City Council to say they're the body that can actually strengthen the policy if there is one and get it clarified so we know if we have one or not, if we're really supporting street trees in our city or not. Yeah, that would be a big issue.
I would certainly support that. Also, did you want to include that with the that billion trees planted worldwide?
I don't have any information on that.
I don't have any information at the moment.
I am
scheduled to get some.
Okay. Well, can we hold off then until we've got more and know that we've got something that we can actually have some discussion
on? Yeah, why not keep that a separate item then?
Okay.
I'll tell you what I would like to do is to include that in a future agenda item of my own that I think the city might benefit from us having a discussion on it. And that is the whole green environment.
The Green Cities Accord.
Yes, yeah. That okay. We touched on briefly.
Right, we were supposed to get some
and
more
the city
that.
Got a brief report from us, but I think it died. I'd like to revive it, and maybe we could revive the whole the Green Cities Accord, the construction materials, using green construction materials, alternative fuels in city-owned cars and trucks, etc., and the trees, the billion trees. Maybe for a future, like maybe February, March.
Okay. So I've got three for January's meeting. Is there anything else that anybody would like to bring up for agenda items for next month?
I think those are three very good ones.
Oh, okay.
I might not be here.
Okay, I know that you are going to be having some...
get a new knee.
He's going to get a new knee because he's got marathons he's going to start running.
Yeah.
And he's going to go into training.
When I get the new ones, I'm sure not going to wreck them.
Okay, well, can we have a motion for adjournment?
We adjourn.
Before that, though, I'd like
yes,
to
sir.
Wish us all a very Merry Christmas and citizens at large watching.
Burlingame for being here as staff member, and Doug and Darren from... our consultant from the Bay Area doing our transit report, and Darren from SLOCOG. And thank you very much for joining us, and be good to each other. Good night.
Yeah.